a Super Bowl champion.
The Green Bay Packers have won the Super Bowl.
The Packers' all-time leading scorer.
A game winner for Mason Crosby.
It's time for the Mason Crosby Show with Mitch Nellis, presented by Verizon, the number one network in Milwaukee, on 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, The Fan, powered by the Pottawatomie Sportsbook and on the free Odyssey app.
And welcome into hour number two of the Mason Crosby Show with me, Mitch Thunder Nellis. No Mason on a Human Wednesday. Human, a.k.a. honey-do list. Clean out that basement, bro. You got the workers. The contractors are coming over. So pack everything up and move it out of there. Let's go. We'll find out if his back is intact after lugging up all those boxes from the basement on tomorrow's Mason Crosby Show. Cannot wait for that. But today, my name is Mitch Thunder Nellis. Tommy Wirtz is here as well. Today is game 81 for our Milwaukee Brewers at AmFam Field, and it is one of the most highly anticipated regular season games in quite some time. Jacob Mizorowski, Paul Skeens, the overwhelming favorite for the Cy Young in the National League, facing the now favorite for the Rookie of the Year in the National League after just two starts. Jacob Mizorowski to discuss that and much more. Chris Miller from 93.7, The Fan in Pittsburgh. Chris, it's like you were just on the show, my man.
Is Mason avoiding me? That's what I want to know, Mitch. Are all these just elaborate schemes that he doesn't want to step into the hot take arena with me or something like that?
It might be. As we know, Mason was Aaron Rodgers' ring bearer at his most recent wedding. No, I'm just kidding. He wasn't really that. But we will definitely, and especially as we have you on week of Packers Steelers this year, we will make sure that Mason is here and faces the full frontal assault of Chris Miller and 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh.
Thank you. I wanted to clarify that would happen at some point because,
yes,
I mean,
absolutely.
If I were being asked to outkick him on a football field, that would be a problem for me. He's got to step into the arena with a man who's only known hot takes his entire life.
I love
that. I'm excited, though, for today, Mitch. I'm very pumped as a baseball fan. The Pirates give us very few reasons to be excited about anything, but this is like one of those ones that I almost get ticked off that I'm technically doing a radio show while the game is happening.
I know.
We have big flat screens, though, in the studio, very fancy studio, and I will be doing the thing where if people are watching me on our YouTube feed, they will see me just having basically a stray eye on the TV the entire time. I'll be like, oh, yeah, caller, great point. What did you say? Anyway, because the thing that usually happens there is Paul Skeens is usually the reason we're doing this. Paul Skeens is kind of like, okay, we're going to watch his innings to see how he throws against whoever he's playing. But, man, seeing Mizorowski feels like it's the rare time where you almost have a higher curiosity factor, even as a fan of the opposing team, about the other guy pitching against Paul Skeens. And I think this might be the first time in Skeens' career where I can say that. Like, man, this dude looks like Mizorowski, I mean, looks terrifying.
Yeah.
And against a team like the Pirates, he should be even more terrifying because none of their players can hit.
Well, and you mentioned that word terrifying, and I think that's what we think of with Paul Skeens. Is like, since he's come up, he has been as advertised, if not better, and I'd say most likely better. He's, you know, a 1.85 ERA. His whip is under 0.9, and he's been dominant. The only thing that's not dominant, as we know, is his win-loss record and the team's win-loss record when he's out there. He's 4-6. I think the team is 8-8 in his starts. And is there any sense of frustration there for Pirates fans that, like, I mean, Skeens could be 10, you know, in 10 decisions, he could be 8-2. He could be, you know, in 16 starts, he could be 10-4. But because of the team, he's 4-6, and every other metric, he's the best pitcher in baseball, and it's not close.
I mean, is there frustration on his part? I think if there is, and there probably is, he's too much of a pro, Mitch, to like let that get to him publicly and to talk a bunch of junk on his teammates. I mean, there's frustration on the part of the fans, but I will say this. We know now that baseball's voting body for major awards is a lot more hip to what the pitcher can control on his own versus win-loss record as far as handing out major hardware. Like, obviously, I would actually tell you that in terms of storylines that are maybe of interest or of pride for Pirates fans, it's making sure Paul Skeens, or hoping Paul Skeens, pitches well enough to get the Cy Young. And, like, that cat came out of the bag with Felix Hernandez about 15 years ago when he, I think, was one game above 500, 13 and 12.
Really the
best pitcher. DeGrom in 2017 with the Mets was insane. His ERA was like 170, but he went 10-9. So, like, there's not as much angst, to answer your question, as there otherwise would be, because I think we know collectively that the people who vote on these awards aren't just doing the old Jack Morris thing. Well, did he show the will to win? Like, did he win 22 games with a 3.5 ERA? Like, well, he just knew how to win. No, like, they know that, hey, the dude is unbelievable. And, you know, controlling what he can control, there's nobody better. Here's the other wild thing that I did not realize this. Mizorowski's like 2 months older than Paul Skeens, which is just bonkers to consider. Paul Skeens is 23 and not even 1 month. And I think that is the other thing that makes him, like, truly a different kind of cat, because he's been doing this since he was 21 years old at the big league level and basically stepped out of the minor leagues, like, ready to be Roger Clemens modern day, which I think is just... Pirates fans are, like, just waiting for the other shoe to drop, but, like, so far they've stayed out of his way as an organization and haven't tried to, like, tell him what to do, and that's been the best thing that they could have done, because I think most people here assume if they had tried to do that, they would have found a way to screw it up.
Chris Miller, 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh, joining us here on The Fan in Milwaukee. So I want to word this carefully, not for more for Skeens and Mizorowski than for me and you. We as fans, we as media members, we watch baseball and we see pretty much every pitcher in the history of baseball who pitches at this level at some point has an injury. And we don't want to see injuries. Like, you know, Corbin Burnes, former Brewer, another Cy Young winner who did it with the Mets, and I don't think his win-loss record was great that year that he won it. We saw him go down this year with the Diamondbacks. What can baseball do? What can the teams do? How do they stay cognizant of, like, these guys are throwing, you know, 100-mile-an-hour pitches. You know, everybody, we're all talking about how Mizorowski's throwing a 96-mile-an-hour slider. How do we figure out a way to keep these guys healthy throughout their careers as well?
You ever watch disaster movies like an Independence Day or one of those, like, Day After Tomorrow type things?
Absolutely.
There's always one character in there who's usually like the sensible one who just goes, well, you can't. This is what happens. I'm going to be that guy here. You can't. Like, there's nothing to do. Unless, here's the ways that you fix this. You either magically find a way to make every human being's ulnar collateral ligament like a full millimeter thicker than they currently are, because it's usually 2 on average. I have actually read about this stuff where pitchers who have either not had a major arm injury or have only had one very late in their career had a millimeter thicker UCL, so like a 3-millimeter UCL, and just made it more resistant to tearing. Or you basically tell these guys, we want you to throw less hard, we want you to focus way less on spin rate, and we want you to look like one of those like sidewinder starting pitchers who's junk balling his way to 6 innings in the 80s. Except the problem is modern day hitters are going to destroy those baseballs.
Yep.
So that's my kind of a roundabout way of saying there is no way to avoid it. Like Skeens, the one thing we're all excited about here in Pittsburgh when we watch him consider his career, knowing he's not going to pitch more than at most probably 5 years with the Pirates because of the realities of the sport.
Right.
He only became a full-time pitcher, really, in the last handful of years. So, relatively speaking, there is not a ton of wear and tear on that arm. So, the chance is decent, I would say, that the Pirates see the best of him, see a relatively injury-free version of him, and then it becomes somebody else's issue. But as far as baseball-wide, you have these electrifying pitchers. You want to see them at the tops of their games. You want to see them out there. You don't want to see even a DeGrom.
Yeah.
Who, for my money, has been as dominant as anybody post, like, almost Pedro Martinez, early part of the century. Even he eventually succumbs. Verlander eventually succumbs. I just don't think that there is a way to actually avoid this. It is just the nature of the beast. You're asking these guys to throw harder and harder, to spin their breaking pitches more and more, which torques the arm even more.
Yep.
I don't care if you're 6'6 like Skeens. I don't care if you're 6'7 like Mizorowski. I don't care if you're 6'10 like Chris Young was, even though he was throwing 85 miles an hour downhill.
Right.
You're not going to avoid this. It very literally is part of the sport until somebody has some sort of medical breakthrough, and I don't think one of those is on the horizon anytime soon.
Chris Miller, 93.7 The Fan, joining us from Pittsburgh. Nick Gonzalez has had a couple great games here in Milwaukee. Is he somebody we should be paying attention to?
Yeah, I gave we do a weekly hit with our one of the broadcasters of the Pirates, Greg Brown, who's been on the call for them as play-by-play man for a very long time. And we like to needle Greg a little bit because we're more cynics, and he's obviously a glass-half-full guy. You kind of have to be in that profession, I think. If the team isn't very good, you're always looking for positives. But we know that this is a historically bad offense here, and O'Neill Cruz going in the toilet lately for the entire month of June makes it even worse.
Yep.
And when we would talk to Greg about the team and how bad the offense was and how frustrating that was because the pitching is, especially the starting pitching, is by and large so good for the Pirates, he would consistently say, well, you've got to wait till Nick Gonzalez comes back. You've got to wait till, and I said to him yesterday, with all due respect, like, we're not talking about 2001 Barry Bonds joining this lineup here. Like, we're talking about a kid who was a first-round pick, but he played in a very hitter-friendly environment in college. So, you know, are you really going to get, like, some home run masher? Probably not. I think you should pay attention to him. I think he profiles more as professional hitter, not second baseman who's going to hit you 25 home runs. I think, like, in a perfect world, he's like a 15 to 20 home run guy. He hits for a high average. He's reasonably selective. He puts the ball in play a lot, and he's an above average offensive player. But he's not like a franchise turnaround by himself kind of guy. He's not that level of bat, but he should be one of the better bats in their lineup as long as he's healthy. That, by the way, isn't saying much,
right.
I'm sure you've looked at Baseball Reference. They basically have the bad news bears out there. I think they're Brian Hayes and Spencer Horwitz have a combined 3 home runs from the classic power infield positions. Yeah. You get a sense of the trouble and of the frustration in my voice as I talk about this out loud in a city where we always get jealous because you guys always figure out how to have a competent baseball team year after year, and this is no different.
Well, I don't know if it's leadership or if it's scouting or whatever it is. It's the organization. But I think, there were people around Major League Baseball who were a little surprised Pittsburgh's Pirates didn't do a little bit more to build around Skeens this offseason. But I will say, Gonzalez has had a nice 2-game, 5-for-5 yesterday. Hits a bomb yesterday, 5-for-5 the day before. He certainly was like, oh, who's this guy?
Like, he's the guy who can hurt you in this lineup right this second. Of all the guys, I would say, Brewers fans, somebody might hit Mizorowski. It's probably him, just because he's the only guy who's swinging anything close to a hot bat. I mean, they just really are void of any offense. I would say if you were getting league average offense from the Pirates, they would be probably 7 to 8 games better at least, and would at least be a factor right now in the division. They would be in the mix. It truly is, Mitch, one of the worst offenses I have ever seen. And I'm 40 years old. I have seen the Pirates my whole life. Trust me, they've put some repugnant offense on the field. This is as bad as it's ever been.
Well, you're 40 years old. I think this guy is right about that, 40, 41. Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is it. That's why we just did a one-year deal. Steelers didn't need to put any extra years on that or anything. So this was really about finishing with a lot of love and fun and peace for the career that I've had. I played 20 freaking years. It's been a long run. I've enjoyed it, and no better place to finish than in one of the cornerstone franchises of the NFL with Mike Tomlin and a great group of leadership and great guys in the city that expects you to win. That was Aaron Rodgers yesterday with Pat McAfee. How's the Aaron Rodgers experiment going, Chris?
So I just came back from vacation. Yesterday was my first day back on the air after basically a full week plus off. And I decided to choose optimism, which had my listeners.
Okay.
There were YouTube comments, text comments, Twitter comments coming in. Have you been abducted? Blink twice if this is the real you. Like, where's our pessimistic pal, Chris? I will say this, just like, I'm comparing him to Russell Wilson last year and comparing all the dynamics, and I do think it's going to work out better than it did with Wilson. That might not yield a playoff win because the AFC is stacked, and you have to almost certainly in your first playoff game climb over a quarterback that probably is a potential MVP. Like, look at the realistic guys you would have to face in the first round. Could be Mahomes, could be Allen, could be Burrow, could be Jackson. I mean, all four of those guys are legitimate, bona fide top five or six in the league at the position. So even if it goes better, it might not yield what people here want, which is at least one playoff win. But
sure,
I do think Rodgers has no ulterior motives here. He does. I take it face value that quote you read back to me. We talked about it a lot yesterday. Like, I really genuinely believe that he just wants to have one more year. I do think it matters to him that it's a cornerstone franchise because he played for one for basically two decades up there with you guys.
Sure.
The Jets are, of course, a place where a kid named Brick is reportedly making some of the personnel decisions, so I would not call that a cornerstone franchise. And here's the thing. This is the rub. Russell Wilson, Mike Tomlin talked him up. Hey, he's been there. Look at his resume. He's a Super Bowl champ. But I think when push came to shove, Russell Wilson's not an upper room of a Hall of Fame guy. I think Aaron Rodgers is. Four MVPs, a Super Bowl, like feats of quarterback greatness that I think most of us can only dream of our team's quarterback performing. Some of the throws he's made, you guys would know way better than I would. I think Mike is going to respect him a little bit more. I think Mike is going to be a little more deferential. When Russell Wilson started to turn the ball over a little bit, when he went maybe a little rogue against Cincinnati and had a huge game, there was pushback internally. I think there's going to be a lot more of a simpatico, copacetic vibe between Rodgers and Tomlin, and probably by extension, Rodgers and Arthur Smith. And I'll say this for Rodgers. Forget about like the, I want my privacy, but I'm also doing a hit on the Pat McAfee show every week.
Right.
Kind of double standard that he's applying a little bit.
Yep.
I do think he is a more authentic guy, a more authentic teammate, and a more likable person for his teammates and coaches than Wilson. Wilson,
okay.
You know this. I mean, you followed the NFL closely.
Sure.
Wilson behaves, I saw somebody write this about him, like his goal someday is to actually be president of the United States. So it's very much like a politician's vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And that just doesn't go over well. And I do think Rodgers, when he gets in there and gets in the locker room, it's way more blood and guts. And I think guys respond to that. And so I think that it's going to go better in that sense. And I think the fact that Wilson was also trying to play for his next contract, or so he thought here, sort of was at odds with how Tomlin and Arthur Smith want to play offense. He wanted to do let Russ cook, let me do my thing, let me improvise, and they didn't want him to. I think Rodgers, hey, this is it for me. I just want to play and then be done. And I think he wants to win from the pocket more now than he ever has in his career. And I actually think, Mitch, that matches up with the head coach, with the OC. And that's why I chose like an optimistic bent on some of those comments he made yesterday.
So you've talked to Tommy Wirtz, our super producer here. He also hosts the leadoff show before every Milwaukee Brewers game. But he and I, we have a casino here in downtown Milwaukee, Pottawatomie. So we get our odds courtesy of the Pottawatomie Sportsbook. Last year, Aaron Rodgers threw for like 3 yards short of 3,900. His over-under this year is for 3,300. 3,300 is basically less than 200 a game. I know the Steelers like to run first. And that's, you know, and I know, you know, or at least that's their reputation. I got to figure Aaron's thrown for more than 3,300 yards this year. Like, I think this is a slam dunk wager. And I'm like, I don't run down to the casino a lot for, you know, on a daily basis, but 3,300 seems like a really low number to me for Aaron Rodgers. I mean, unless he gets hurt, which could happen, injuries happen, but if he doesn't get hurt, he's thrown for more than 200 yards a game, isn't he?
I mean, I think you just said it, though. It's the injury concern that you're betting on. And they have a line that's going to need to show that it can perform. Broderick Jones is going to be at left tackle where they initially drafted him to play, and then they butchered that situation. He's finally going to be over there. Troy Fautanu, I mean, they've invested a lot. Zach Frazier, those are all first or second round picks I'm talking about. But they need to keep him upright. So I think the only reason that number is that low is injury related. I really don't buy it being a function of, well, this is Mike Tomlin's team and he wants to play retrograde Stone Age, like early 1990s offense. I think it's more, can the guy stay upright for 17 games? Because I mean, I'm looking at it right now. Even in a pretty down year, his last year with the Packers, he still threw for 217 a game. He threw for 230 a game last year. I mean, I think if he plays 17 games, then yes, I would tell you that that's an easy slam dunk bet. And if you and people out there are confident that he is better physically now coming off of the second year away from the Achilles, then I'd make that bet. But as far as it being like, oh, no, they're going to ground and pound here, no. I think if they're going to win, he's going to be throwing touchdowns. He's going to be having an occasional 300-yard game. I don't think that they're going to tell him, hey, we brought you here for a swan song, and now we want you to just kind of sit, chill, and watch.
Yeah. Chris Miller, 93.7, the Fan, joining us here on the Mason Crosby Show, presented by Verizon. The NBA draft is tonight. Does Pittsburgh care at all about the NBA or the NBA draft or anything that goes on in the NBA?
They cared for this playoff run for the Pacers because TJ McConnell, a kid who was built like one of those like tall coat racks when he was in high school, like he was that skinny. There's a very funny picture. If you type in TJ McConnell, high school freshman year, like you'll see him and you'll be like, wait, that kid became one of the more valuable NBA players of this year's season and playoffs. So there's a lot of local pride in him, just local kid done good. Comes from a big-time basketball family around here, but no, I mean, the league is
those
not.
Those are the skinniest arms I've ever seen in my entire life.
Right. It's a very funny picture, right?
Like, you should compared to him now.
Be like, right. I mean, he deserves like a ton swole. Of credit. He made himself into an athlete, but he's always been a great basketball player. I mean, there's stories of him playing a Philly powerhouse in state title game and just chirping at them all game long. Their point guard was going to Wake Forest, and TJ just handed him like 33 points, and his team lost in like double OT because basically every other guy on the court for the other team was better than Chartiers Valley, his high school's team, you know, players.
Okay.
And he still kept them in it. So there was interest in that, and there was interest in how much shine he was getting from, like, legit NBA people going, this guy is going to be the reason they win the series if they pull this upset. But independent of stuff like that happening, no. I mean, you've got people who definitely like hoops around here. It's this weird – there's a weird – like push from some corners of media and fans on social media, Twitter, the internet cesspool, to tell you that everyone hates basketball. It does plenty good enough in the ratings most years, but it's definitely not something I'm going to go on the air today and be like, guys, NBA draft, let's talk about it. You know, throw out the phone number because no one cares on that level. Very much a hockey city in terms of what like your avid sports fan cares about, which I know kind of puts it in reverse from a place like Milwaukee, where I would imagine it's Packers, then it's Brewers, and then it's Bucks.
Yep, that is correct. Chris Miller, 93.7, the Fan. That answer actually leads me perfectly to my next question. And this, I'm going to put you on the spot on this one, Matt. I was listening as I drove in this morning, and Maggie and Perloff went to break. And right before they went to break, they mentioned something about the Pittsburgh Mount Rushmore of sports. And I'm sure, you know, we've all done this in sports radio, right? The Mount Rushmore, it's a slow day during the summer or the winter after the Super Bowl or whatever. And so they said, oh, what's the Mount Rushmore? And they said, you know, what's the Mount Rushmore of Pittsburgh? And I immediately thought, like, with the long legacy of the Steelers and the long legacy of the Pirates, how do you not have both Mario Lemieux and Sidney Crosby on that Mount Rushmore? And that immediately takes up two of your four spots for hockey. Is that how most Pittsburgh fans go? Like, do those two have to be, or is there a debate that you need to get Clemente and Stargell on there, or Terry Bradshaw has to be out there, but what about Franco Harris, or what about Rod Woodson, or what about Roethlisberger? Like, how do you get it down to four when you talk about the Mount Rushmore in Pittsburgh?
I don't know if I missed you say this Steelers name at the start, but any of those Steelers names you mentioned take a backseat to Joe Green, who's going to be the greatest.
We mentioned him earlier in the show. Yeah. But you're right.
So it starts with Joe Green. Lemieux is always going to hold a more special place in Penguins fans' hearts because I don't think it's controversial to say that Mario Lemieux is the single most talented and gifted hockey player who's ever set foot on the planet. Like, wow. You want to argue that Gretzky, oh, look at all the point totals. Go look at Lemieux. Go look at the injuries. There were times he'd play when somebody else would tie his skates because his back was so bad. I don't think there's been a more physically gifted player and therefore greater talent in the history of hockey. In fact, you could argue that Bobby Orr would be second on that list and ahead of Gretzky as well. So that'll get people all fired
up. As a native Bostonian, I'll take Bobby Orr in that conversation all day.
Sure, like I Lemieux was 6'4", 220, and ate like double cheeseburgers and was ripping heaters in the locker room.
That's
like
crazy.
The stories of basically how he didn't take care of his body until he made his comeback in 2000, and then by the way made his comeback and was instantly the best player in the league again after 3 years away. Like the stories of all that are legendary. So it's Green, It's Mario because he also saved the team from bankruptcy and brought them back from the brink. They would be like the Kansas City, whatever you want to call them, playing hockey if it wasn't for him. It is Clemente because of not only 3,000 hits, but the humanitarian work, the reason that he passed away, going to do humanitarian work after an earthquake and perishing in that flight makes him larger than life. Fourth is you can debate a bunch. Do you go with Terry Bradshaw, who won 4 Super Bowls, but who has a weirdly frosty relationship with some people in town? Do you go with Franco, who was offensively the guy who defined those 70s teams? You could go, there are some people go, Jack Lambert. He wasn't even the best linebacker named Jack on those teams. That would be Jack Ham, but yep. I digress. You can go Crosby. You can go any number of different directions. Modern day me, I might say Crosby just because he's won 3 cups. He has conducted himself like immaculately as a representative of the city. So they've been the most, in my lifetime, the most successful Pittsburgh team, 5 titles since I was born, all 5 of their titles. I would probably go Crosby and Lemieux belong there, Clemente, and then Joe Green. And I think that's a pretty, for me at least, that's a pretty ironclad 4.
Nice. Yeah, that's an undebatable 4 for sure. And you know, the reason I was thinking about it is because again, you know, that hockey question is that like, and I think we battle with that conversation a lot here in America is like, you know, as hockey has clearly become the number 4 sport when it was once it was one of the big 4, now it's clearly number 4. You know, there are still cities where it's still a big deal, and Pittsburgh is obviously one of those cities.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's not an original 6 city, but listen, it's hard for hockey not to be a big deal in a place where the teams have had legitimately the best player in the sport or the best player adjacent for 40 straight years. They draft Lemieux in 84. It's hilarious. There's very funny stories of them obviously tanking to make sure they got Lemieux.
Right.
Then they go right from there. They have a very small period where nobody would go to the games because they stunk and they didn't have Crosby yet and Jágr had been traded. Because Jágr took up the torch of best player in the world after Lemieux retired. Then Lemieux came back, like I said, immediately the best player in the world again for that partial season. Then they have Crosby 2 years later coming out of the lockout. They have Evgeny Malkin, who in any other city could have been, or in any other situation, been the standard bearer of a franchise. It's very hard for hockey not to be popular here when the team has just been that star-studded. Here's a free topic, though.
Okay.
What city in American professional sports has the best overall Mount Rushmore? Think about that one.
Hmm. All right, that's a good one.
You on that one.
Yeah, I will put that in the holster for sure. Chris Miller, 93.7, the Fan in Pittsburgh. Today, at least, our Mount Rushmore of pitchers, of Major League pitchers who are pitching today. Jacob Mizorowski and Paul Skeens are both on that list. The game is at 1:10 our time, so we're a little bit under 3 hours away. Cannot wait for that matchup. It's going to be a fun one to watch. I know you'll be watching it while you're doing your afternoon show. Chris, again, thanks so much for jumping on today. And I promise the next time we have you on, it will be Chris and Mason, round 1, ding, ding.
Mitch, thanks for having me. Looking forward to the next time.
Awesome. Can't wait. Chris Miller, 93.7, the Fan in Pittsburgh, jumping on with us to talk about Paul Skeens, to talk about Aaron Rodgers and the Mount Rushmore in Pittsburgh, just because that was a topic on my mind. Again, I want to go back to the NBA draft a little bit, though, because we know Cooper Flagg. We know Colin Knipl. We don't know anybody else. And the Bucks don't even pick tonight. Like, the Bucks pick tomorrow night. They split this. They split what did not need to be. This is not a 7-round event. This is a 2-round event. This did not need to be split into 2 nights. I think the NBA, you know, the NBA is not, you're not the NFL. I know you want to be the NFL. I know internationally you might be bigger than the NFL. But when it comes to the NBA draft, not so much, my friends. Brewers and Pirates play rubber match of their 3-game series this afternoon at 1. All eyes, of course, are on Skeens and Mizorowski. Get ready for the first pitch with the leadoff show powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook today at noon on 1250 AM and 105.7 FM. The Fan, you're listening to the Mason Crosby Show with me, Mitch Thunder Nellis, presented by Verizon, the number 1 network in all of the Milwaukee.